This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
You know, there's a great Lenin quote out there, and I know Vladimir Lenin was a monster. There's no question about that, but he was a monster who understood that education is everything. And I say that as an uneducated person, right? I say that as somebody who, I don't even have an associate's degree, but education might not be the word I'm looking for. Training is probably the word I'm looking for. Lenin's quote was, "Give me 4 years to teach the children, and the seed I have sown will never be uprooted." Have you ever seen poll numbers in the country as far as how people vote, which way? Ever seen that? It's fascinating. But there is one number that is eye-popping. It was talked about a lot in the lead-up to the Trump-Joe Biden election. If you go to a university and graduate from a university, you are overwhelmingly communist. It's not universal, so don't email me. I graduated, and I'm not interested. I don't care. The numbers are staggering. If you stop after high school, you're probably on the right. If you go to a university for 4 years, communist. Why? Well, people are trainable. We all are. You are. I am. Who you are today, whether you're 5 watching me now or 95 watching me now, who you are today is in large part a result of the training you received throughout your life, from your parents, from your teachers, from your coach, from your work, from your wherever. Human beings are trainable. And here in the United States of America, the communists, they've been working on us for a very long time. And you should know, before we get into, you know, the videos and things like that and wonderful guests in the show, you should understand that this was done on purpose. Always remember that. It was not an accidental thing. The communists didn't trip and fall and start educating our kids. The Soviet Union, this is in the early 1900s, they were trying and trying and trying to get communism into America. They could not get a foothold. They kept trying and it would fail. And they'd get a little foothold here and it would fail. But they just kept failing and failing and failing. And they just started pulling their hair out. Why can we not get through? And they came up with this answer. The American worker is not like the worker in Russia. The American worker is happy. Generally, I realize that we all have complaints about our job, but the American worker is happy. He's provided for. He has a home, 3 hots and a cot, a family. The American worker is not an angry revolutionary wanting to burn the system down. Well, if you're a communist, you don't let that stop your plans of destruction. So what to do? What to do? Well, they decided, hey, why don't we just start teaching them? Instead of trying to whip up a frenzy in the streets and riots and our normal communist things, why don't we just slowly but surely work our way into the American education system? And instead of protesting and rioting our way to a communist revolution, we'll simply educate generation after generation after generation of Americans to hate themselves, hate their country, hate their parents, hate their values. And that's why today your children go to school and in history class they learn that America is the genocide of Native Americans, slavery, of course, that's always in there. Then they'll skip right to the civil rights movement and, oh, too bad, so sad, history class is over, that's the history of your country. Why is this taught in school? Because the purpose of our education system, our government education system today, is in large part to destroy the minds, to poison the minds of young people against their own country. And it was done on purpose. That's why you have a country full of teachers like this.
So at the start of a semester, I ask my students for their pronouns, a reminder that they are not preferred, but they are the pronouns that we should be addressing them by. And I also ask them to tell me if I can use their pronouns in front of the class, in front of other teachers, and when I call home, because everyone is in a different part of their journey, and we need to be able to respect that.
I've been doing some reading this summer, and so I thought I would share a couple of books because you have a little bit of time left to do some reading. I also read Jack, Not Jackie by Erica Silverman. Phenomenal read. So if you're a K1, 2, 3 even, it's a really good read called Jack, Not Jackie. And I really enjoyed that, and I'm excited it'll be on our shelves in the media center this fall.
All right, we have to talk about this right-wing idea of parents' rights. It's literally just fascism.
So this question says, what do your students call you since you're non-binary? Miko's one of my students. What do you call me, Miko?
They, them.
That's my pronouns, but what do you call me as your teacher?
Teacher Roby.
So you know my pronouns are they, them. You know that you go by, or I go by Teacher Roby. What are your pronouns?
She, her.
I want to talk about that teacher who said parents' rights is fascism. It was an interesting line. Parents' rights are fascism. Because they say these kinds of things a lot, as if your children belong to them.
The children are always ours, every single one of them, all over the globe. And I am beginning to suspect that whoever is incapable of recognizing this may be incapable of morality. From Gaza to Little Village to Altgeld and all over the country, the children are all ours, every single one of them, and it is our duty to fight for them.
I'm going to say something I've said to you before, but I'm going to keep saying it because it's hard to accept. It's hard to hear, but it is true. There is a very good chance there is a teacher or several in your child's school, no matter where you send them, public or private, who is a predator trying to break your child away from you, break their morality, break their patriotism, break their spirit. These people with that mentality, the children belong to us, they are everywhere in our communist education system, and that is communism 101. Grab the children. They belong to us. They belong to the state. They don't belong to the parents. We must grab them and make them our children, children of the state. And of course, you understand the reason behind all of this. There's a reason they've tried to break up the nuclear family. There's a reason they go after the children, children who are taught values by their parents, who hold on to those values, patriotic values, good values. They are impenetrable to the communists. But if you can break a child away from mom and dad, shatter that connection. Hey, you don't have to tell mom. Hey, you belong to me. Well, then you can implement communism anywhere you want to implement it. They're predators. I know they just look like some fruitcake lesbian in the social studies class. I understand all that. They are predators after your child. And before I move on and play this communist John Denver, and we talk to other guests and things like that, if there's a Black Lives Matter flag in your child's classroom, that's a predator. If there's a rainbow flag, that's a predator. Any communist indication in the class, that is a teacher who every single day is trying to shatter your child. Get them out, all right? Communist John Denver wasn't lying.
Voting is still our best defense against tyranny and fascism. When the history books are written about this moment, let them record that we the people united, mobilized, and voted down this existential threat to democracy and freedom, that we continued the march for progress, that we laid the foundation for a better future, and that we sought to create a more perfect union. Progress is possible. Keep marching.
America's teachers' unions, many of America's teachers, they see themselves as soldiers. Soldiers running, not schools, a boot camp. A boot camp you send your child to every day. Be ever vigilant in this fight because I promise you, they are not tired just because Donald Trump won an election. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We have a bunch of guests, great ones. Talk to them in a moment.
So, my name is Mix Crystal, like Chex Mix. Can you guys say hi, Mix Crystal?
Hi, Mix Crystal.
Does anybody know what Mix means? There's Mr. and there's Miss. Anybody seen Mix before?
No.
So, Mix basically means I'm non-binary. That means I don't identify. identify as a boy or a girl, which means when you talk about me, which you better not have a snack, you're going to say, they. Exactly.
Sorry. That's all I can do is laugh anymore at these freaking monsters who teach the kids in this country. Joining me now, Dr. Corey DeAngelis, author of the book, The Parent Revolution. He's been all over this stuff. Okay, Corey, we've all seen, we've all been enjoying, I know you've been enjoying the Trump administration declaring war on all this DEI madness, but all the vile little apparatchiks educating our kids, even if they got the memo, that don't mean they're going to follow it.
Yeah, exactly. This is a total narcissist here in the video, Mix Crystal. I mean, it's a she, and she's inflicting her own imagination onto the children. They could be using that time to learn how to read, write, or do math, but instead, she's just brainwashing the kids, and the kids are just like, she's like, do you know what mix means? They're like, no. You can hear them in the response, but this is free advertising for homeschooling. Do you want to send your kids to this individual where they're not going to focus on the basics? They're going to explore their fantasies with the young children. I mean, look at her jumping around. She looks like she's just so self-absorbed. It's all about her. It's not about the kids and learning how to read. And why is she wearing a shirt that shows her belly? It's just inappropriate as well for being in the classroom. By the way, this is a Chicago public school teacher. They spend about $30,000 per student per year. It's a government-run failure factory. 33 of their public schools have 0% math proficiency rates. They can't teach kids the basics, but they go ahead and do this random crap that parents don't want. And this is why Trump won the parent vote by 9 points. And parents in this district and elsewhere, if you see this kind of stuff, you should report it to the Trump administration. He does have a link out at the Department of Education website where if they're not following the executive orders, he needs to defund them to take away their federal funding if they're going to engage in politics as opposed to education.
Speaking of the elsewhere you just dropped right there, I can almost see people rolling their eyes because, of course, it's Chicago and the United States of America. We're used to Chicago being kind of the wackadoodle left-wing epicenter of everything, but this kind of stuff takes place in Texas. Texas's House Democrats, the chair, here he was.
How do we tell people we're going to take your money and give it to rich people? So they can send their kids to private school. So they don't have to have their kids with your kids.
That is the leader of the Texas House Democrats, Gene Wu. And he says that families send their kids to private school so that they don't have to have their kids with your kids. He was talking at a public school there. Well, guess what? He went to private school himself, and he now currently sends his kids to private school. Is he telling on himself? It seems like that was just pure projection on his part, trying to go all in on hysterics against school choice for other people's families, obviously, but not for his own. He's a total hypocrite on the issue. And Trump just tweeted out recently to go all in on school choice. He's calling on the Texas House to pass school choice once and for all. It already passed the Senate by a vote of 19 to 12. I think the House has the votes to get it across the finish line as well. The new speaker, Dustin Burrows, has responded to both Elon Musk and Trump recently on social media saying the House is going to pass the bill this time as well.
How about that? Fingers crossed. Okay. Let's move on and spike the football a little bit on somebody affectionately known on this show as Communist John Denver. Randy Weingarten's taking things hard. Here she was.
What we're hearing is just complete chaos and, frankly, a whole bunch of cruelty. Because at the end of the day, you can make departments more efficient. And I'm not a big believer in bureaucracy, but this feels like, as Elon Musk said to you, evisceration. So here's a guy who has hundreds of millions of dollars of contracts from these departments, and he's not touching them, but what he's doing is really taking money from kids who really need it in the field. And these departments, yes, they can be much more efficient, but that's what the education department does. It gives out money to kids so you can feed them a decent lunch, so we can have, you know, tutors for reading so you can actually help kids with math problems. That's what's going on right now.
Corey, is that what the Education Department does?
The Department of Education doesn't even run the federal lunch program. She doesn't know what she's talking about. And she just has a severe case of Trump derangement syndrome, because the bill in Congress right now would send the money back to the states. No money. The money doesn't just disappear. You just stop paying her lackeys in D.C. at the Department of Education. There's 4,400 employees pushing paper, not doing a bunch of anything, making six figures. Randy herself makes over $500,000 a year. And she previously said on MSNBC that the federal government shouldn't be running education, that the localities should be running education. She accidentally made the case for abolishing the Department of Education. And there's a bill right now by Senator Mike Rounds in Congress. He's the Republican from South Dakota, and that would literally send the money back to the states using the Treasury Department in the form of block grants, and things like civil rights protections that would move under the Department of Justice where it should be in the first place, and things like Pell grants would go under the Department of Treasury, scholarships for college. So it really isn't that monumental of a shift, but the control would go back to the states. And Trump ran on this issue. It's very popular with voters. He also ran on nationwide school choice. And this week, recently, he's been tweeting out or posting on Truth Social in different red states to advance the ball forward to pass school choice. It just happened in Tennessee, which became the 13th state to go all in on school choice. They're all red states that are doing this, by the way. The Democrat-controlled states are controlled by the teachers' unions like Randy Weingarten. And so even though the voters support the policies in places like California and New York, the unions have a stronghold, and they're a money laundering operation for the Democrat Party. All of their contributions from Randy Weingarten's union goes to Democrats each year. It's ridiculous.
Okay, Corey, I actually want to wrap up and talk about that, because that brings me to my final point here. School choice is wonderful. It very clearly has the momentum, really in large part thanks to you. I know there's been a lot of people working on it. You've been all over this. But the blue states, states like California, there are more Republicans in California than any other state. You know, but it's blue. It's run by the dirty communists, and that's not going to change tomorrow. Are they without hope when it comes to all this? Are they just done? Is there nothing that can be done for these people stuck in these blue states?
The quickest way to get school choice if you live in a blue state is to move to a red state. Move to Florida, move to Texas. More realistically, if you want to stay in California, push for the Educational Choice for Children Act. It's a bill in Congress. It's a federal tax credit. It's not federal money following the student. You get to keep more of your own dollars that don't go to the federal government in the form of a tax credit to be used for education expenses. This is supported by Donald Trump. He said he'd sign the bill. It already passed out of committee in the U.S. House of Representatives. The speaker's on board, Mike Johnson, and also the Senate president, John Thune, the majority leader in the Senate, is also supportive of the legislation. So Republicans have a trifecta. They need to use it, pass school choice, get it done. Trump campaigned on the issue. Parents want it. And this would also not just advance school choice in red states where it's already happening at the state level, but also expand educational opportunities to families in blue states. Otherwise, hopefully, if the Democrats keep being on the wrong side of history on this issue, those blue states will become red states at some point, like we saw with Terry McAuliffe, the Virginia former governor who lost to Glenn Youngkin on the issue of parental rights in education. So the more that Republicans keep hammering this issue, they're going to win elections on the issue. And Democrats, if they're smart, they'll start to come along too. They'll read the tea leaves and say, you know what, this is a loser for us. We better side with the kids' union, the parents, not just the teachers' union.
Who can forget Terry McAuliffe giving up a seat, giving up the governorship of Virginia by telling parents they shouldn't be involved in their kids' education? Thank you, Terry. That was masterful. Corey, thank you, brother. I appreciate you. All right. We'll be back. I know you're going to be shocked to hear me say this because I'm an uneducated white trash person, but we actually really need an outstanding university system in our country. It's really, really critical to have a good institution, higher education institution in the country. We haven't had one in quite some time. There are some gems in there, though, and hopefully we can turn things around. Joining me now, Nicholas Giordano, Higher Education Fellow at Campus Reform and a college professor in Emily Sturge. She's a Campus Reform reporter. She's also a student at the University of Florida. Nicholas, Professor, let's begin with you. The university system in the country has always been a little left. That's not exactly new, but it wasn't always this bad. So what happened?
No, it wasn't always this bad. When I went to college, I had Marxist professors, but they actually supported the idea of education. They encouraged debate and dialogue, and they loved having me in their class to get into it, because college used to be about seeking out the truth, having this open discourse for intellectual inquiry. Yet over the last 20 years, it's turned more into an indoctrination camp. If you go to these four-year university campuses, you're pushed with left-wing propaganda, and it's designed to build out the next generation of activists as opposed to educating the student body. We have, you know, the stats at Campus Reform that we pump out, where 37% of graduating seniors can read, write, and do math at the college level. Only one-third of college graduates can actually think critically. And employers have had enough. They've begun to move away from four-year degree requirements because they're not happy with the employees, the recent college graduates, that they're getting.
Emily, you are in the belly of the beast. Granted, Florida is not Berkeley, but you're in the belly of the beast. How much of an outsider are you now on campus? We all hear the horror stories about the token conservative who's corralled into a group of 10 people while everyone throws toilet paper at them. What's it like for you?
You know, I can attest to this. I can attest to being silenced in the classroom while I face professors who are attempting to indoctrinate me with their leftist agenda. And I don't buy it. I stay true to my values, and I do receive backlash from my peers. Being a conservative on a college campus is essentially putting a target on your back, whether you're outspoken like myself or, you know, for people that maybe aren't as outspoken. Even if you raise your hand in the classroom and talk about conservative ideas in the classroom, you are putting that target on your back, which is why college students are so excited to see, specifically conservative college students are excited to see, a presidential administration that is making us proud to be conservative on a college campus. We have a presidential administration in office that is restoring values of meritocracy, that is rooting DEI out of the federal government, that is restoring women's sports teams. All of these initiatives are things that are really resonating with young conservative students and making us proud to voice our beliefs on our college campuses once again.
Professor, it's very obvious that the culture has shifted away, at least for the time being. Everything kind of comes and goes. It's shifted away from this kooky cultural Marxist garbage that we've been dealing with. Are you seeing any kind of that kind of shift on college campus among your dirty commie colleagues, or are they just still as entrenched now as they've always been?
Well, one of the things that I find interesting is when we talk about values like a meritocracy, like upholding the Constitution of the United States, to me, I find it amazing how these are now labeled as conservative values, where just, you know, 20 years ago, these were American values. It wasn't right or left. It's amazing how far the left has gone. And as far as my college goes, we have a little bit of normalcy. I teach at a community college, and what that does is our student body is reflective of real America. It's not the four-year university bubble. So the professors are a little bit more in line. They obviously lean to the left. It's academia, but it's more reflective of what real America is like. The real problem stems on the four-year university campus, where you have everyone that conforms to this groupthink mentality. And if you don't think like them, you're ostracized. Whether you're a faculty member or you're a student, you're targeted. And that's the problem. There's no respect for dissenting viewpoints. They have no tolerance, even though they preach about this phony idea of inclusion.
Emily, you're not just a student there. You're obviously a reporter for the wonderful Campus Reform. So you talk to people, you ask questions. Do you get the sense, I mean, the poll numbers look great. It looks like young people, young women, young men, it looks like they are waking up a bit. I don't think they're all, you know, Winston Churchill at this point in time, but they are waking up a bit. Are you seeing that at the University of Florida?
Absolutely. I'm talking to members of Generation Z every single day, whether that's my friends, my peers, people on my college campus, or even people on social media. I have a good sense of what's going on America's college campuses. And even the Wall Street Journal has reported that there has been upticks in conservative membership at organizations across the country, at universities like Boston University. And even at my own university, I've seen this uptick in excitement about joining conservative clubs on campus. We've also seen social media trends of Gen Zers wearing their MAGA hats, flying their American flags. It's very clear that college students are excited to welcome this administration back into office. And even in things like the tech sector, we've seen young people excited about conservative values. We've seen Elon Musk is Musk's Doge, 18 to 24 year old engineers excited to help the federal government root out waste, fraud, and abuse. So it seems like in so many sectors, so many areas of this country, young people are experiencing this revival in conservative values.
Yeah, it's nice. We're even getting the nerds now. This is awesome. Professor, endowments. Let's talk about the money, because it seems to be without end. Like you mentioned, corporations are moving away from the degree requirement because they're getting a bunch of morons who have college degrees. But the University of Harvard doesn't have to the $100 billion. They just have unlimited amounts of money that it doesn't matter if the tuition gets too much. It doesn't matter. They appear to be untouchable with these endowments. How do we even begin to tackle that?
Well, you tax them. That's one way you could do it. But when we actually... College is a business, and you have to get students in the classroom and fill seats in order for the business to succeed. When I started at Campus Forum, the very first article I wrote is how there is a reckoning coming to the higher education system. You have parents and students that have lost faith in the higher education system. Only one-third have confidence in it. You have the employers that have walked away, and you have the donor class that has pulled their funding after they saw the pro-Hamas, pro-terrorist protests that were engulfing college campuses. And so colleges have to make a decision. They either have to reform and get back to the core principle of education and actually produce students that are going to graduate and can contribute to our society, that are going to exercise good citizenry, that understand the concepts of hard work and merit, or they're going to continue to push a far left agenda that people don't want, that people have overwhelmingly rejected, including professors on the left who have actually been targeted by the DEI mobs. And they're going to stay with the ideological indoctrination camps, and they're going to go out of business. Okay. And that's, we're going to see a lot of colleges close their doors in the next 5 years. And then you have the demographic that's changing. There are less students. So it's going to be a more competitive environment to fill those seats at college campuses. So if they don't get back to the roots of education, many of them are going to have to shut their doors. And endowments can only keep you in business for so long.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of failure, Emily, you want to talk about the University of Florida's football team or no?
I'll pass.
All right. Both of you, I appreciate you very much. Come back soon. We'll be back. Well, education is one of those things that always brings up debates, like public school, private school, whatnot. But we do lose sight of how much of an education our children need at home. Homeschooling, if you are able to do so, is, in general, in my opinion, the best option. But even if you don't homeschool, you have to educate your children at home. Yes, my children, they go to school. They learn math and things like that, and they're not going to get any algebra from me. But the best lessons in life are learned at home. We have to be educators at home, no matter who we are. So I thought Abby Roth would be the first person, probably the best person I could think of, to talk about this kind of thing, creator of the first generation stay-at-home mom. Abby, which school can educate your children as well as you can?
Not one. Honestly, I don't think there's any school out there that could do as good of a job as I could do. And that is not just coming from somebody who, you know, has prepared myself mentally. I think that a lot of people, a lot of women, a lot of parents have been convinced that they would not be able to educate their children at home. They're just not capable. How could anyone do this huge undertaking of raising their kids at home and homeschooling. And it's such a disservice to us as parents. We really do have the capability to teach our own children. That's what people were doing for generations before public school became the thing. And it's so disappointing to look at my friends, to look at everyone I know who thinks that homeschooling is weird. And then for me to look at my own children and be like, oh, my 2.5-year-old expressed an interest in the moon. And now he knows literally everything there is to know about spaceships and space shuttles. And it's just because he expressed an interest. I thought that was really cool. I took him to the library. We watched some videos. We talked about it. And all of a sudden, he's an expert. I'm an expert. Something I never gave a crap about before my son was interested. Excuse my language. But before my son cared about space, you could not have paid me to care about space. And then because my son was interested, all of a sudden, I'm like, this is the coolest thing ever. Because if my kid is interested, then so am I. And we can learn together as a team.
Abby, please tell me you have discovered, if not, you're gonna get on Amazon right as soon as we're done talking here. Please tell me you have discovered the greatness of the glowing planet and star ecosystem kits you have, because I had a kid who was obsessed with this same thing. And when you turn out his lights in his room at night, we set up, it took a while to do it, but of course he was involved in it. We had like the ecosystem on the walls and the ceiling, and it was sick. And he would just sit there and point everything out. I'm telling you, you need to nerd out on that if you haven't already.
Yeah, sounds like I should.
Yeah, all right. Now, back to what we were just discussing, us separate of this. Young moms hear you say that, because it's generally going to be the mom doing the homeschooling, understandably. Young moms hear you say that, and they'll immediately think, well, I'm sure Abby is, you know, some kind of, has some genius education. I'm not what she is. I didn't even go to college. I can't even do algebra. I can't. And these are very understandable fears, because mothers, well, fathers too, they don't want to fail their children. They don't want to set their children back. So to every mother out there watching you on television right now saying, well, yeah, she's smart and qualified, I'm an idiot, will you please talk to that woman?
Yes. I am not more qualified than you are. I don't have a degree in education. I don't think anyone needs a degree in education. And also, I will tell you that most teachers in public schools do not have degrees in education. When you are home with your kids, it's homeschooling. There's a ton of books on this topic. I am currently reading a book called Kids Don't Need School that specifically talks about this. But even going back to the book, Weapons of Mass Instruction, that book teaches you what schools are actually doing. And what schools are actually doing is using the Prussian model of education. Now, the Prussian model of education was really about getting little kids and getting, you know, educating people to be compliant. That was the point, was we want you to be little kind of robots working for the government, and we don't want you to ask any questions. We want you to memorize, take tests, sit in your seat. And we still do this today, right? We're still using this model of education now to teach our children. And we think that that's normal, that it's normal for kids to take tests, that it's important for kids to be tested and to study and to sit for hours on end, when there are studies and studies and studies showing that little kids, especially little boys, cannot sit for that long and are then diagnosed with ADHD because they can't sit for an inordinate amount of time. But this Prussian model of education really does a disservice to students, to children. It teaches them how to sit. It teaches them how to memorize. It teaches them how to listen to instructions and not ask questions. And what people say is, oh, we're preparing them for the workforce. Well, there's a reason that people are afraid to become entrepreneurial, because they don't have the skill set to work outside of a system. So the reason I bring all this up is because you don't have to educate your children in the Prussian model. You can educate your children to love learning. And to do that, all you have to do is follow your children's interests. If you follow your children's interests, they will end up learning far more than they ever would in school. There is so much for them to explore, for you to help them explore. And on top of that, there are so many resources. There are homeschooling co-ops. There are there's conventions in almost every state, maybe every state, for homeschooling parents, where you can make connections, where you can find curriculum. And if you're not the one who can teach your child algebra, there's someone who will be happy to tutor your child. I mean, there are so many avenues to homeschooling your children and taking responsibility, not just for your kids' education, but for who they are. And that for me is so important, is that homeschooling isn't just about teaching your child how to love learning and teaching your child certain topics. It's also that you're home with them all the time. So you get to shepherd them and make them the kind of person that you hope they will be.
Amen. Now, your seven-year-old boy, he can't sit still, and it's not because he has ADHD. It's because he's a seven-year-old boy. That's why he can't sit still. Okay, so let's talk about making friends. This is another very big concern, one of those traditional things about, traditional concerns about homeschooling. Well, I don't want my kid to be a weirdo. I don't want him to be some freak without any friends. My kid, he wants to play sports. He's a basketball player. He won't be able to do that. Will you talk to those people, please?
Yes. Socialization is the stupidest argument against homeschooling. It drives me crazy for a number of reasons. One, the socialization that happens in schools is entirely unnatural because we separate children not just by age range, but by specific age. In no other time in history have we said the only friends you're allowed to have are 8 years old. You're eight, now you can only be friends with eight-year-olds. That is insane. Real socialization is spending time with people who are older than you and younger than you, spending time with adults, spending time with babies, spending time with people who are different from you and in different stages of life than you are. And so the socialization that we think is normal is not. Also, what does socialized even mean? What does weird even mean? When we look at public schools, do we think that the children that are coming out of public schools are normal? Especially in today's day and age when public schools are pushing all of these crazy ideologies on kids. You look at the kids who are coming out and they're struggling with their sexuality, their identity, who they are, what they want. I wouldn't call that normal. And they're screen addicted. When you have children at home, they're able to socialize, A, because of the things like I mentioned, co-ops, even just going out in the world. If I take my kids to the grocery store, they're meeting everybody there. They want to say hi. They want to meet the person who's checking them out. I mean, that's socialization in and of itself, but they also have a ton of friends just from the different mommy groups we go to and the library. And for us, and a huge thing I think is so important, is our religious community. I think a lot of homeschooling moms spend time in their religious communities. And for us, even if we didn't see anybody all week, which doesn't happen frequently, we have a lot of play dates, but if we didn't see anyone all week, on Saturday for us, because we're Jewish, we spend all day with our community. So my kids are incredibly connected with people from all different age ranges at our synagogue. And that's a huge blessing. I would never say that a child at home is going to be less socialized because unless you are literally keeping them closed in at home, you are going to have a chance for your child to meet other people and spend time with other kids their age, including, by the way, their siblings, who they spend far less time with when they are, you might hear my children right now, when they are at school than when they are home. Because I think about this all the time, that my kids spend all day together, learn how to function together. And when they are separated and when they are at other, you know, in daycare, in schools, whatever it is, they see each other maybe a couple of hours a day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, one final question, then you have to go find out what those kids are breaking in the background. American parents are watching this. And they want to know, what's step one? How do I get started? I'm a nervous parent, Abby. I don't know. What step? Where do I go? Is it a website? Is it a book? What do I do? Where do I go to?
I mean, I think the first step, yes, there are books that you can read just to educate yourself on different schooling methods. I mean, there's a lot of different methods out there. There's classical education. There's kind of unschooling. There's Montessori. There's all these different kinds of methods out there. But the first thing I always say is just follow your child's interest. Just see, what is your child interested in? Really, the thing that changed my mind is I had a friend who was telling me about how she was in school and hated learning. And her mother just said, you know what, we're done. I'm taking you out of school. You need to learn how to love learning again. And if that's your kid, and if you're looking at your kid and you're saying, this kid hates to read, this kid hates going to school every day, you need to ask yourself, do you want to see your child hate learning by the time they're 15? Do you want to see your child be so disinterested in taking in new information and doing something exciting with their time, which I think is learning new ideas? Then it's maybe something to consider. Like, maybe I should take my child home. Maybe I should take my child into homeschooling and we can explore a new avenue here, because it is so disappointing to see the light go out of children's eyes when it comes to new concepts, new things that they've never learned about. I mean, a toddler is never going to be bored if they're being exposed to new ideas. So why does that have to ever fade? And if we see it fading because of school, then it might be a good idea to take them out and bring them home.
Might be a really good idea. And I promise at home, no one will teach them they have to be gay. Abby, thank you, ma'am. I appreciate you as always. All right, we'll be back. Just be vigilant. You know, when we talk about this stuff in education and the things happening, it can be overwhelming. What can I do? I'm nervous. Talk to your child. Show up at school board meetings. Run for school board. Be involved. Homeschool if you can. If you can get them out of government schools, get them out. If you can't, work around that. We just have to be aware, and we are more aware now. I want to make sure I wrap up this show by driving that point home. We are doing good things in ways I have never seen on the right before. For the longest time, we were lost, completely lost when it comes to the education system, what was happening inside of it, and why it was happening. In large part, thanks to COVID, we are more awake now than we have ever been. So feel good about the direction we're going. But we cannot slow down, we can't tire, we can't back off, we can't get comfortable because Trump won the election. We have a million battles to fight around this country. At the local level, there is nothing more important than the schools. The communists understood that 100 years ago. We must understand it today. We'll do it again.